It's 19 hours 30 UTC on Wednesday, December 20th, and this is Zimbabwe Today.
Those people know need a reason to come back to Zimbabwe after they graduate. They're only going to come back if there are jobs for them and opportunities to support their families. Otherwise, they'll remain in the United States or go to the UK or South Africa as their predecessors have done.
That was Harry Thomas Jr., the U.S. Ambassador to Zimbabwe. We'll have more from our talk with Ambassador Thomas coming up. Good evening. I'm Chidonjene.
And I'm Kudzimai Mutetwa on VOA's Zimbabwe Today.
Earlier today, we had the opportunity to sit down with the U.S. Ambassador to Zimbabwe. We'll go right to that discussion now.
We have with us in studio United States Ambassador to Zimbabwe, Ambassador Harry K. Thomas Jr., to speak with us about the new government and what the U.S. hopes for Zimbabwe's future. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here with you all, and I would like to say Merry Christmas to all of our friends back in Zimbabwe.
Merry Christmas. So could we start with just having your thoughts about what you think about the new government in Zimbabwe?
Well, I think the new government deserves a chance. Mm-hmm. We'd like to see how well they perform. We know that the president of Zimbabwe gave the State of the Nation address, mm-hmm. where he promised economic reform as well as governance reform, particularly in the area of corruption. I think what Zimbabwe is a country where over 60% of the people are under 40. And most people want jobs, as they do in the United States. Mm-hmm. So we're pleased that President Mnangagwa is going to address the economy. But at the same time, it's important that he address human rights, freedom of speech. Young people are on social media. They use Twitter, Instagram, Facebook all the time, but especially Twitter for political discourse. And they don't want to see that interrupted.
So, speaking of President Emmerson Mnangagwa, do you think he can deliver on his promises for a better Zimbabwe before the 2018 general elections?
It's hypothetical. We don't know. I think it would be difficult for any person to change an economy in 6 or 7 months. Yeah. That's a Herculean task. What you can do is put in place the signals that will allow American investors and others, including Zimbabwean investors, to make a decision. Mm-hmm. He is going to the World Economic Forum in Davos tomorrow. He will be, or Friday, I think, he will be in Pretoria addressing business persons. Mm-hmm. Those people are going to be the ones that make the decision. And I think it will be important for him to hear from them whether they think Zimbabwe is open for business or whether he needs to take additional steps.
And then in terms of just personal freedoms, mm-hmm. for citizens of Zimbabwe, do you think that this new government will be more willing to have freedom of assembly, freedom of speech, and other freedoms that are generally there for those in a democracy?
Well, the Zimbabwean president has promised everyone that that's going to continue. Mm-hmm. I met the foreign minister a couple of times. He said the same thing. The information advisor has said the same thing. And I don't think they could go back. The genie is out of the bottle. Zimbabweans love the opportunity, like we do, mm-hmm. to speak freely, mm-hmm. to criticize your president freely, to make jokes about your president freely. Mm-hmm. Before, they would make jokes about Mugabe quietly, and nobody would make a joke about Grace unless they knew you very, very well. Now they're making jokes about everybody. Mm-hmm. And I think that's welcome. People were suppressed, not stupid. And why shouldn't they have this? And I think particularly young people, how are you going to stop them from using social media unless there's a crackdown? They promise that's not going to happen, and we're going to hold them to their word.
So what are the priorities that the United States would like to see the new government focus on?
Our priorities remain twofold. One, good governance, human rights, free and fair election, nonviolent elections, but all in accordance with the Zimbabwean constitution. Mm-hmm. President Mnangagwa has said this is going to happen. Now, we are heartened that they're going to extend the voter registration period, but they say they need more money to do that. I hope that money is found, because you have seen almost a tremendous spike in voter registration, mm-hmm. since Mugabe left office. Now we have almost 4.6 million people registered, mm-hmm. but the target is 7.3 million. So we want to see that happen. We want to see elections free and fair and nonviolent. We would like to see election observers. The United States has no intention or desire to lead the election observers. We'd like to be part of it. We think it should be African-led. Mm-hmm. We think the Zimbabwe needs to determine who should play that, but we would like to be there. That would be one part. The second part is what we addressed earlier. Economic opportunity, because that is also freedom. 95% of the economy is informal. Mm-hmm. That doesn't help the government with taxes and revenue needed, especially for schools. So that's what we would like to see.
Okay. And then turning to those elections, mm-hmm. what do you think President Mnangagwa should do in terms of facilitating to make sure that they are free and fair?
Well, first of all, the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission needs to be free. The new head should be a respected person, most likely from judiciary. Mm-hmm. That would be fine. It should be free of interference from the Central Intelligence Organization or the Zimbabwe Defense Forces. When people go to vote, mm-hmm. they should be able to vote without intimidation. The other day, the lead chief said the chief is going to, they're going to support the government. That's a little troubling, especially because of their influence in rural areas. They should, in my opinion, they should say, we're going to let our villagers decide who they're going to support. And then make sure that the elections are violence-free, that counting is done in accordance. Again, all of this is with the Zimbabwean constitution, because Zimbabwe has a wonderful constitution. The 2013 constitution is their document, and it should be implemented.
And then in regards to those elections, do you think that the military will have any kind of role within the elections?
Well, the information advisor, my good friend Chris, said the military will have a role. But that role, again, should be in accordance with the constitution.
Okay. So you spoke about young people. Will the president take care of the needs of the young people, taking into account that his cabinet compromises mainly people who participated in the 1970s liberation struggle?
Well, that's up to him. It's not for us to tell him who structured his cabinet. But, you know, my distinguished predecessor, Ambassador Bruce Warden, told me that if you ever feel depressed in Zimbabwe, go talk to the young people. And I think that President Mnangagwa will recognize, as we do, the talent of Zimbabweans, especially the youth. I'm always bragging. I know my colleagues get tired of me saying this ad nauseum, that the intellectual capacity of Zimbabweans is equal or surpasses any place I've ever lived, including the United States. I'm always talking about the number of Rhodes Scholars we have, and Humphrey and Watson. This week, Rebecca Ziegler-Mano, who runs an Education USA office, she was putting on Facebook acceptances to Harvard, to Stanford, to Yale, to Morehouse, to Spelman. It was wonderful. Those people, though, need a reason to come back to Zimbabwe after they graduate. They're only going to come back if there are jobs for them and opportunity to support their families. Otherwise, they'll remain in the United States or go to the UK or South Africa, as their predecessors have done.
With that in mind, what do you think the U.S. government can do to help younger Zimbabweans and to encourage them to take a bigger role in Zimbabwe's political sphere?
Well, I think we need to continue doing what we're doing. You know that we have the Young African Leaders Initiative, mm-hmm. where Zimbabwe's number of scholars is on par with all the other countries in Africa, that the number of applications per capita exceeds almost every other place in Africa. We need to sustain that. Continued funding for our Watson, Fulbright, Humphrey programs that are aimed at young scholars. We have a self-help program where we help businesses try to bridge funding for that. But the biggest thing that's going to help is American and international investment that provides jobs. You know that Pepsi Cola just opened in Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
Pizza Hut is opening right after Christmas. Mm-hmm. These are American corporations who made a decision to come to Zimbabwe despite the challenges. And that's going to employ people. The challenge is a lot of times that person at Pizza Hut is a university graduate, is an attorney, can be a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And so unless opportunities open, they won't be able to fulfill their dreams.
Well, thank you so much for joining us and taking the time out to answer our questions.
Thank you for having me. Again, Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to everybody in Zimbabwe. Much appreciated. Tatenda.
That was United States Ambassador to Zimbabwe, Ambassador Harry K. Thomas, Jr.
Zimbabwe's new president made his maiden State of the Nation address today, painting a picture of a Zimbabwe on the path to recovery and steps his government will take to ensure a quick path to recovery. Reporter Kudzai Zunawashe was there and spoke with members of parliament for their reaction.
In the State of the Nation address, known as SONA, President Emmerson Mnangagwa said some of the country's policies initiated a few months back were beginning to bear fruit. Eddie Cross is a member of parliament for Bulawayo South and a member of the main opposition group, the Movement for Democratic Change.
I thought for his maiden SONA, I thought it was a very good effort. I think he hit all the right buttons, and I think his commitment at the end to a free and fair election was very, very important. Now, I'm basically very pleased. I think that he's made a good start.
During the address, members of parliament periodically banged on their tables and clapped in agreement with Mnangagwa. Thokozani Kupe is a member of parliament and the vice president for Movement for Democratic Change Party.
Uprooting corruption, creating employment, and making sure that there is value addition. There are so many things that are incorporated into that speech. So we would want to wait and see. For now, it is difficult to judge because this is his first time. The problem that we have always had with our previous governments is that they say things but they don't implement.
Kindness Paradza, who represents Makonde as a member of the ruling party ZANU-PF, was happy with the address.
The president was very clear, and this is now a new dispensation, and he's discussing about introducing a cocktail of policy measures which are going to revive this economy, and he's going to do that. And we're happy that he also talks and is so serious about the re-engagement and engaging also with the international community.
Paradza says he would love to see Zimbabwe back in the Commonwealth of Nations and cultivating economically beneficial relations with other countries. Mnangagwa said growing the economy is high on his agenda, and his government is currently on a 100-day challenge to begin to address most of the country's biggest problems. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zunawashe from Harare.
Vateereri veStudio 7 tinoda kukuzivisai kuti tava nezvimwe zvirongwa zvakatanga zvatichange tichikupakurirai kubva na 6 a.m. kuseni kwega kwega na 2 p.m. masikati ega ega nechirongwa chenyu chamagaro ziva cha 7 p.m. mazuva ose. Munokwanisa kutibata pa 909 medium wave frequency, pa 4930 shortwave, 15580 shortwave, ne 6080 shortwave mazuva ose. Musakangana kuti tichangezve tichitepfenyura pa Facebook page yedu ye VOA Shona. Kana musati mafarira Facebook page yedu, ibvai maenda ikoko motsvaga pakanzi like mubva matifarira. Tokuyeuchidzai zvakare zvirongwa izvi zvinenge zvichiitwa na 6 a.m., 2 p.m. na 7 p.m. manheru ega ega. Musakanganwe.
Just after wrapping his State of the Nation address today, Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa headed to South Africa. On his first official trip as president, Mnangagwa will meet with South African leaders and the business community. He meets with South Africa's President Jacob Zuma tomorrow at his Pretoria residence. He has invited Zimbabweans doing business in South Africa and businesses interested in investing in Zimbabwe to a meeting tomorrow afternoon. Zimbabwe has long Zimbabwe has long had a strong relationship with South Africa. In addition, hundreds of thousands of Zimbabweans live in South Africa. Most are economic migrants seeking work in South Africa's strong economy.
You're listening to Zimbabwe Today, live from Voice of America Studio 22. I'm Kudzinai Mutetwa in Washington, D.C. At 45 past the hour, we continue with the news.
The UN Children's Fund warns children in Yemen risk death as access to clean water runs out due to import restrictions of fuel into the country. Lisa Schlein reports from VOA from Geneva.
Saudi Arabia's blockade of humanitarian and commercial goods into Yemen is causing a crisis on many levels. The UN Children's Fund says the blockade is creating a severe fuel shortage, causing steep price hikes and deepening the country's already serious water and health crisis. UNICEF reports the cost of diesel fuel has doubled during the past month, jeopardizing the provision of water, especially for the poorest families. It says water pumping stations serving more than 3 million people in 14 cities are quickly running out of fuel. UNICEF spokesman Christophe Bouillard says prices of commercially trucked water, a main source of one-fifth of the population, have skyrocketed.
For over two-thirds of Yemenis living in extreme poverty, safe water is now completely unaffordable. Almost 400,000 children suffer from severe acute malnutrition in Yemen, and they are fighting for their lives. And the poor access to safe drinking water is also one of the most important causes of malnutrition.
UNICEF warns the lack of safe water and other vital services are having a serious impact on health care and sanitation for children. It says thousands of children are in a particularly weakened condition and are vulnerable to outbreaks of diseases, including acute watery diarrhea and cholera. It notes life-saving vaccines worth millions of dollars are at risk of being damaged because they cannot be properly stored without fuel. UNICEF is urgently calling for an end to the blockade. It warns the crisis afflicting the Yemeni population and children in particular will spiral out of control unless fuel and other life-saving humanitarian aid can freely enter the country. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Uganda's parliament has passed a bill that would allow President Yoweri Museveni to run in the 2021 elections. The bill removes the age limit on presidents, which currently is 75. Museveni, who has been in power for 31 years, is 73. 317 members of parliament approved the measure. 97 voted no. Next, it will go to a committee for more scrutiny before a final vote can be held. Critics of Museveni have opposed the measure, and the past few days have seen scuffles among members of parliament. Today, two members of parliament got into a confrontation with security forces and were taken away in police vehicles.
Scientists warn a campaign to eradicate polio in Central Africa is falling short because of the upheaval in the Lake Chad Basin area, where Boko Haram remains active. On the positive side, Gabon has been declared a polio-free country. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaounde.
Professor Rose Leke, who heads the Africa Regional Certification Commission for Polio Eradication, says Central Africa has seen no cases of polio in the past 15 months. But she adds scientists cannot be sure the polio virus has been eradicated in the region. Leke says medical teams find it difficult getting access to conflict zones in Mali, the Central African Republic, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and parts of Cameroon, Chad, Niger, and Nigeria affected by the Boko Haram insurgency.
DRC has circulating polio viruses. So many of them were really worried about the country, and so we had specific recommendations also for RDC and for all the others.
We're still very concerned about the Lake Chad Basin area, the Borno area, where we don't know what's happening there. I think that's the concern for the entire world.
Rose says polio cases have decreased by more than 99% in the past 30 years, from an estimated 350,000 per year to just 37 reported cases in 2016. She says as a result of the global effort to eradicate the disease, more than 16 million people have been saved from paralysis. According to the United Nations, once a case of polio is recorded, it takes 3 years of no other case to declare the zone polio-free. Gabon recently reached that goal. Gabon's neighbor, Cameroon, has attained the status of non-polio exporting country but is still considered a high-risk nation like other African states, with an influx of refugees from conflict zones that healthcare workers mostly avoid. But Ali Mayatu, Cameroon's Secretary of State in the Ministry of Health, says the country is also on track to be polio-free. He says they have prepared an ambitious plan to make sure Cameroon eliminates polio by 2019. Central African states have organized numerous inoculation campaigns, but more than 15% of children in the region remain unvaccinated due to cultural resistance, conflicts, and illiteracy. Moki, Edwin Kinzuka, for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Njani mathabezulu linjani zulu kandaba sifisa ukulibikela ukuthi silethulela indaba ezimqotho ngeZimbabwe suku zonke ngo 6 am 2 pm la ngo 7 pm eZimbabwe lisibamba kumagagasi athi 909 meter wave 4930 15580 la ku 6080 shortwave frequencies lila kunjalo ukusithola ebulenjini bokuzilibazisa ku Facebook ukhasi lethule VOA Ndebele. Land of sunshine, land of
plenty, land of blue skies. Hundreds of South Sudanese refugees have entered the Democratic Republic of Congo this week, after South Sudanese government forces captured a rebel base near the border. Jason Patinkin has more from the town of Aba in the northern DRC.
Amid gunfire late Sunday, South Sudanese troops entered Lasu town, which had been the rebels' second general headquarters. The rebels pulled out the next day. Mary Awate fled her home to the forests when the clashes began. With her children to take care of, she spent 2 days hiding in the bush before reaching the Congo border on Tuesday. She said, "We just heard the sound of the gun, especially these big ones, so everyone just started running in the bush." The new arrivals fled to the Congolese town of Aba. More than 30,000 people had already gone there since the start of South Sudan's civil war in December 2013. More than 2 million people have fled South Sudan during the war. There have been many ceasefires declared, but none have been observed. In Aba's hospital, Isaac Bida lay with a bullet wound in his back. He said he was shot by South Sudan government troops near Lasu as he tried to flee on a motorbike. Bida said he is a civilian. He said, "When I saw the soldiers before from far away, they were calling me, 'Please, come, come.' But something came into my mind to be careful of them, and as I tried to turn and go, they shot 3 bullets. The 4th one hit me. Maybe they thought I was a rebel." Refugees were still entering Aba on Wednesday. Liwo Morris Taban, the chairperson of the South Sudan refugee community in Aba, said some of the new arrivals are in critical condition after fleeing through the forests. He urged fellow refugees to stay at the refugee site rather than go back to South Sudan to search for lost relatives.
It is very, very, very risky for them to go back to South Sudan because people are running now from there. They are fearing government soldiers. And it is very hard for me as the chairperson of the site to allow people to go back. I know some left their relatives, their kids behind, and they have that intention of going to bring their kids, but it's a bit risky.
A new round of peace talks between the government and rebels began this week in Ethiopia. 35-year-old Charity Awate, who fled the Lasu fighting with her husband and 6 children on Tuesday, said the fresh fighting has dimmed her hopes of an end to violence. She said, "At first we heard of the talks and we were happy, but now we have been chased to Congo. We are not confident in that." With no peace in sight, she and others must look toward a new life as refugees in Congo. Jason Patinkin for VOA News, Aba, Democratic Republic of Congo.
The United Nations Refugee Agency says it is building up its life-saving operation for thousands of English-speaking Cameroonians who have fled to southeastern Nigeria to escape violence from the majority French-speaking community. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The crisis, which has propelled thousands of English-speaking Cameroonians to seek refuge in neighboring Nigeria, is far from over. The UN Refugee Agency reports asylum seekers continue to arrive as unrest in Cameroon shows no signs of abating. UNHCR spokesman Andre Mahechich says his agency and government teams have registered more than 7,200 arrivals in Nigeria's Cross River State since October 1st. That is when tensions escalated between security forces and pro-independence Anglophone demonstrators in largely French-speaking Cameroon. He tells VOA this is only a preliminary number, as thousands of other asylum seekers are yet to be registered and counted among the new arrivals.
Given the remoteness of the area, it is very difficult to access and to get a precise finger on the pulse in terms of what might be the daily arrivals at this stage. But certainly we are in the process of beefing up the presence there, and, as I said, moving on with the government on the registration.
The UNHCR reports about 70% of the registered asylum seekers, a majority women and children, come from the area of Akwaya in southwest Cameroon. Mahechich says the resources of the local communities hosting the refugees are being stretched to the limit. He says the UNHCR and partners are scaling up relief operations to meet the needs of all affected people. But he says distributing food, basic relief items, and medical aid in this remote region is very difficult. He notes the operation currently is being hampered by heavy rains that are washing out the road network. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That was Ja Prezam Dada Chawia. That is it for us this evening on VOA Zimbabwe Today. I'm Chidondere.
And I'm Katanai Mutafwa. We will be back again tomorrow at 9:30 p.m. Zimbabwe time for the latest news and analysis in English. VOA Shona and Dabela broadcast can be heard at 7 a.m., 2 p.m., and 7 p.m. Zimbabwe time.
Stay with us around the clock on Facebook at Studio 7, VOA Ndebele, and VOA Shona, as well as our VOA website, www.studio7news.com. Come on,